The multi-billion dollar corporation 3M, or the Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing Company, is behind dozens of well-known household products, including Scotch tape, masking tape, and Scotch Guard fabric protector. But in her latest investigation, award-winning environmental reporter Sharon Lerner reveals that since the 1970s, 3M knew and kept secret much damning information about the toxic chemicals accumulating in people's blood that came directly from their products. Her latest article, titled "3M Knew About the Dangers of PFOA and PFOS Decades Ago, Internal Documents Show," that's the name of the article, is the part 17 of the Teflon Toxin series, published by The Intercept in partnership with the Investigative Fund. You can find it on theintercept.org, and I'm happy to welcome Sharon Lerner back to our show. Sharon, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So this is the first time I'm talking to you, and I was asking you just before we started that about the fact that this is part 17 of this series, and you thought it would just be perhaps like a three-part series when you started working on this, which
Silly
was
me.
When?
That was in 2015. So, and it was during the summer, so exactly 3 years ago.
Perfect. Perfect summer, light time
fair. Yeah, it's beach reading. sadly, yeah, more heavy horrible stories, but 17 of them. And so, yeah, so this started out as a series about this chemical PFOA, which I knew that was used by DuPont to make Teflon.
Right.
And basically, there was a huge lawsuit in West Virginia because there, around one of their factories, there was a suit because there was massive water contamination for people living around there. And the suit revealed all these terrible things about DuPont. They had gotten all these documents in discovery. And so I wrote about that place in West Virginia and what DuPont knew, which was a lot of the same things that we're hearing in this article, that they knew that their chemicals were toxic, that they were seeping out beyond their plant, and that they accumulated in people. And so that series, and since we're at now 17, part 17, I won't try to cram it all in there, enough to say perhaps that it's been this very windy, crazy story that started out as this really kind of local story. Here's
right.
this contamination issue in West Virginia, and here are people who worked at the plant and maybe were exposed in these specific ways. And then as it unfurled, and these have been an insane 3 years for this particular issue, we've learned that the chemical that was, you know, in these six water districts in West Virginia is actually in the water of tens of millions of people across the United States.
Tremendous.
Right. It's also spread throughout the world. And as, you know, what we're seeing, what we saw in those original DuPont documents, and then what I also saw and wrote about in this piece, is that scientists who worked for the companies were studying these chemicals as they were making them. And they were learning some really disturbing things that we, the public, didn't know until really recently. And so these chemicals that accumulated in people, and actually they're now in virtually everyone. They're in newborn babies. They're in you. They're in me.
Great.
Yes, great. Right. And you didn't have a say in the matter. But in any case, these chemicals are now very widespread, and we know that they actually do have a number of health effects that they learned about, some in the 70s, and now we know a ton about.
Well, okay, let's just go back a little bit, because I was more and more alarmed as I read this last report. Can you talk to us about what PFAS and PFOS are? What are they?
Okay, so it's PFOA and PFOS. OS. Here, let me explain. It's completely confusing.
PFOA and PFOA.
Well, people say PFOA and PFOS, whatever.
Okay. Yes.
Everybody can be forgiven for not understanding these acronyms. Those are these two chemicals that PFOA or PFOA, right, was used to make Teflon.
Okay.
But then it was used in lots and lots and lots of other products. PFOS, very closely related molecule. And both of them, I should say, were initially developed by 3M, which is the company I'm writing about this time.
And I can remember when Teflon, you know, sort of came upon, you know, came out.
Huge deal.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
And so was Scotch Guard, which
right.
was made with the 3M chemicals. And So they were also very a major ingredient in firefighting foam, which so basically 3M teamed up with the U.S. Navy, and I've written about this in other pieces, and came up with this firefighting foam that was really effective putting out jet fuel fires.
Okay.
And which was really fabulous.
And very phased, important.
Very important. And phased in very widely by the military, not just in the U.S., but around the world. And what we realize after the fact and way too late is that in the so militaries here and commercial airports here and around the world use this to put out jet fuel fires. But they didn't just use it to put out the actual fires and emergencies. They used it to train people again and again and again and again. And as they sprayed it, it seeped into the ground and went into groundwater and ultimately drinking water. And that's how much of it got into the water of tens of millions of people.
But oh, that's horrifying.
It is.
That's horrifying. Is there such a thing with these kind of toxins? I hate to even use this term. Are there like permissible limits right. of toxicity?
Well,
where
this is.
It won't kill you. It's just maybe bad for you.
Well, it's such a good question, and this is what has been in the news lately about these chemicals, because the EPA set these drinking water standards that were supposed to be to guide. You know, people as to what is safe. And until they those came out very recently, the levels were higher.
Right.
So they had safety levels, even though there were like guidances, but they were much higher. So then they revisited them and came out with 70 parts per trillion, which is, you know, so whatever. That's just a number to you. But what becomes important about that number is that pretty recently, it came out that another division of our federal government, the ATSDR, which is part of the CDC, had done a study showing that the levels should be much, much lower. In fact, 7 and 11 parts per trillion. So that's a tiny fraction, right? And so, and I'm going to get to why this is relevant to this piece. But basically, you have this real discrepancy. And I've talked to a lot of scientists about mm-hmm. this who study this closely. And it really seems that the lower numbers are reflective, they're based on studies that are valid that show that these chemicals have effects at very, very low levels.
Okay.
So ATSDR came out with these low numbers. New Jersey, which has a very strong water team, also came out with very similar numbers. And Europe, the a European regulatory agency, just came out with even lower numbers. So I think that it is pretty safe to say that the EPA's values are not reflective. And so where this story comes in is the difference when you look at sort of what these numbers are based on. The difference for some of the lower ones is that they're including these studies that show that the chemicals have effects on the immune system at really, really low levels. And
so even yeah. though the levels are low, they still are hurting people.
Really, really tiny amounts of these things can affect. You have these population studies now and animal studies that show that even very, very low levels affect things like immunity. And more broadly, they are associated with two kinds of cancer, with elevated lipids and cholesterol. And a whole bunch of things, obesity. But what was interesting and what came out through this batch of documents was that this immunity stuff, which mm-hmm. is driving these very recently, you know, these low numbers from New Jersey and from the ATSDR and from Europe, they're kind of based on these immunity studies. And so everybody's going, oh, immunity, wow, okay. And yet when I looked at these documents, they had evidence that they were impacting the immune system in 1978.
Holy
mackerel. And that evidence mounted over the years. And so we didn't have it, but they did.
They did. Just to reintroduce you, I'm Nancy Giles. I'm speaking with Sharon Lerner about her ongoing investigation for The Intercept. This is part of the Teflon Toxin series. And I am shocked. I sound like that line from Casablanca. I'm shocked, shocked that there's gambling going on here. I'm shocked, shocked that 3M wasn't more forthcoming about what the studies were showing. And I'm wondering about some of the people who worked for 3M who are conducting studies and finding out some of this information. Why? Well, we know why, but how did 3M manage to quash that information getting out that, some of these, that things were way more serious than they wanted people to know about?
Well, you can see that there is dissent within, as there was
right.
DuPont as well. And often it's the scientists who are saying, hey, you know, they're used to publishing. They come from grad school where it's all about publishing. You find something out, you publish it.
Right. Right.
And some of it, I should say, was published. You know, there is a study, there's this, you know, a scientist who did his dissertation work at 3M for a year. And, you know, he came up with this study showing that the levels of death from prostate cancer were higher among those who had been exposed to this. And he did publish this.
Right.
But he also came out, he had, you can see from the documents, there are these internal emails from his supervisor saying, hey, he's got three studies here. We're working with him on the wording.
This is Frank Gilliland.
Yes,
that's his name.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly. And so, you know, and he, none of them came out, you know, from a literature search, you can see they're not there. So
right.
What happened?
Yeah. How, and I went, as I read your article, my notes are just filled with WTF and question mark, question mark. How did they get away with that? How did they, I mean, how do you not let people know that there are these discrepancies? How did the EPA not know, or how did this happen?
Well, first of all, I should say it's not just them. And because I think we see this again and again, right? It's like Exxon knew, 3M knew, DuPont knew, which was my, you know, my other story. And I think that what you have is you have these scientists who work for industry where their first obligation is not to present necessarily their information to the public, right?
Right.
So there's,
I mean,
that.
They have a contract, I guess, with the companies.
But for sure that there's this other piece of it, which is like, where was the EPA? So the EPA, first of all, they don't get a lot of this information. They get a huge batch of documents in 2000, which is when 3M decided, hey, we're going to take this stuff off the market. We're not making this anymore.
Well, this was after knowing about this for now 20, 30 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
all right. Just
22 for a lot of it.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's worth knowing that EPA... a few years later, in 2006, actually find them, right?
Finally.
So here's the thing. I think it was $1.5 million, something like that.
When I saw that figure, by the way, we're going to have to take a break in a second. When I saw that figure, I thought, it can't be that low. That just nothing.
But this is the thing. How does that happen? It happens because if you're a corporation and if you're thinking about, maybe you're thinking about lots of things, but one of the things you're thinking about is your shareholders. Well, is it worth it to keep making a very, very lucrative product if you're going to take a hit of $1.5 million at some point? If in that way of looking at it, you know, it helps explain it.
Hey, this is Nancy Giles, and I'm still speaking with Sharon Lerner about her ongoing investigation for The Intercept and the Investigative Fund as part of the Teflon Toxin series. Sharon, 3M doing some really, really kind of bad things. So can I just go back a little bit, and can you talk about how the chemicals, how PFOA and PFOS, how they actually harm our bodies? You started to talk about a little before the break.
Sure. So there, first I should say that this whole study of how they affect our bodies is in process, very much. I mean, in the past 10 years or something, it's exploded like tenfold. And right until 2000, which is when they took these products off the market, pretty much no one knew anything, right? And so to talk about that broadening a little bit, we mentioned them, PFOA and PFOS, the two main, you know, those are the best known ones.
Well, right.
Part of the way that this has been exploding is to understand the broader category that they fit in. So there's like an entire class of chemicals that, what these are chemicals that are carbons bonded to fluorines, really, really strong bond, which is why they're useful in industry, but it makes them also very persistent.
So and these, powerful, I would think.
Yeah, so these chemicals will be here after you and I and our progeny and everyone else is gone from the earth.
That's kind of frightening to think of.
They don't break down on their own.
And
right?
So they don't break down in our bodies,
well,
either?
Well, our bodies eventually get rid of them, but it takes years in some cases, most cases, with PFOA and PFOS. Some of the replacements, it takes less. Some of the replacements, it takes more. But, like, they definitely some of them have biopersistence, right? But the very disturbing thing, and a side story, which I won't go down the street, I promise, but I'll just tell you that a big part of this was that, and that came from this series, was that the replacement for PFOA, so DuPont says, okay, we're going to take it off the market. As they're doing this, they put in the replacement. Guess what?
It's
similarly
worse.
Similarly toxic. But again, it's too late because this is in the drinking water of people in North Carolina, probably other places too, 250,000 people who are grappling with this. There are lawsuits exploding all over the place. So it's turned into this insane and awful story. Now back to how do they affect us?
What can they do to
us?
Yes.
So we're seeing, again, I mentioned immune. The West Virginia lawsuit that I talked about had a panel that kind of found six major probable links to, and this was just PFOA, but it was testicular cancer, kidney cancer. I'm not going to remember them all. Let's see.
Those two are
elevated,
frightening
enough. Yeah, you know, so elevated cholesterol and preeclampsia and thyroid disease are among them. And so, but now we also see obesity and immunity. And immunity is interesting because immunity ends up impacting everything, right? So a lot of research is being done to explore these and other connections.
So in 2000, as you said earlier, 3M gave the EPA, finally, after a long time, hundreds of documents that they had withheld from the agency, which, again, I'm like, how do they just do that?
Right.
But, okay, so they give them these documents, and they got the paltry $1.5 mm-hmm. million fine. Mm-hmm. And it took until 2006 for that fine to even come through. I mean, it's what's funny is when I saw that, I thought, oh, that must be, that's like how the EPA is running now, because Scott Pruitt seems to be just in, well, much more sympathetic, let's right. say, to people who might hurt the environment.
Though
than
now
people
he's
who are
gone, protect- but yeah.
But this was way before him. How did yeah. that happen even back then? That would have been during the Bush administration.
Right. Well, the Bush administration was also similarly slow. But I think also regardless of the party, you have a slow and lurching and overburdened agency. And I think maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but part of the problem here, you know, I mentioned that we're talking about how it's a small fine, and that does not act as a deterrent,
no.
really, right? And to be clear, they were being fined in part for withholding information, right? So you're not supposed to withhold information that signals that something is really, you know,
absolutely
a public health threat. So obviously, you know, so it was a violation of the law, but it's interesting to note that it was treated in this way, with a consent order, with an agreement, you know, and basically it's a civil penalty as opposed to a criminal one. And there is certainly the potential to bring those criminal penalties. And I think they would probably have more of an impact.
I would say with more of a penalty. What I liked is that, let's see, Rena Stenzor, who is a professor at the University of Maryland School, she wrote Why Not Jail?
Best title
industrial,
ever.
I put that in the margins. Why Not Jail? Industrial Catastrophes, Corporate Malfeasance, and Government Inaction. I mean, that is,
yeah.
I don't think anything short of that is going to be a deterrent to these companies.
I'm afraid you're right. And it's interesting, you know, because this gets viewed by lawyers and, you know, in this micro way, you know, what is the, you know, one of the things I describe is an article that in the draft form emphasized these real problems with PFOA. And then when they actually published it, didn't highlight those problems at all and buried them in the 15th paragraph and didn't say much and didn't have all the tables that explained the problem.
They're very
anyway,
clever with
so,
that, aren't they?
Right. So when you, okay, where's the crime there? And it's like you end up digging into this minutia. Well, you know, they may be withheld. And, you know, I talked to legal experts about it. Well, okay, the penalty there, well, maybe they just will have to run a correction or maybe they won't be able to publish in this journal or, you know, and it's like, wow. And then when you step back and this is really why I went back and did this piece is to kind of take a step back and think about what are the consequences of all these actions taken together and how, you know, and you think about what is really the impact of doing all this. And What if in 1978, instead of finding out all these terrible things and continuing with their work, only to be fined later a tiny bit, what if they decided not to stop making it then, you know? And of course, there would have been huge financial consequences for the company and their shareholders, but also this problem, which back then was like, you know, you saw these, you saw the chemical in workers' blood, you know, right. You saw it just in, you know, beginning.
It hadn't seeped into the environment.
And it was.
It hadn't seeped into water or anything.
Exactly.
Like that.
It was an occupational problem. It was an occupational problem that affected very few people. And now it's an issue that affects basically the whole planet, you know? And so how do you even think about the consequences for that?
Oh my gosh. I'm Nancy Giles. I've been speaking with Sharon Lerner about her ongoing investigation for The Intercept and the Investigative Fund as part of this Teflon Toxin series. Now, Sharon, this is part of a 17-part series. What were some of the most but I understand why. What are some of the more shocking things that you discovered overall as part of your reporting?
So it was the first three pieces, as I mentioned, were sort of about West Virginia and the failure of the EPA to deal with more harshly with that company. I mentioned Gen X, which was that the replacement for PFOA was basically just as bad. And the other thing that kind of shook me and ended up being this insane story that, again, has rippled outwards across the country and around the world was that firefighting foam was this major source of water contamination. And that, again, we were talking about sort of lurching, slow, and you know, government agencies. We're dealing with this with the military now. And one of the pieces I wrote sort of recently was about how they're phasing in replacements that are basically in the same class of chemicals.
So what is the point of the replacement if it's just as bad?
Well, because we basically have better data on PFOA and PFOS, and so they're putting in these shorter chain compounds, some of which leave your body more quickly, most of which leave your body more quickly, but they're still accumulating, yeah. And we still don't know their all of their health effects. And the real problem with that is that there are actually alternatives that don't contain these chemicals. And the industry has worked really hard to make sure that they do not enter the market.
Are they more costly?
They say that they're not safe. And basically,
are they not safe?
They're environmentally safe for sure. On one of the tests, they have like a 10-second longer reaction time in terms of how quickly they put out a jet fuel fire.
Okay.
But every fire expert I talked to, including people who run airports and that use these replacement chemicals that don't contain these chemicals, say that there's absolutely no difference in the use of them. So right now, actually, there is a bill in the House that would give, the crazy thing is, to go back to the military for one sec, all the commercial airports, because of FAA regulations, have to use the military standard foam. So they're all using this thing, even though they don't need to.
Oh, for and there's Pete's a sakes.
Yeah, and the FAA Reauthorization Act, actually the House version, now says you don't have to use those standards. And it's the first little like crack in the ice around this. Like, it's so, other countries have figured this out. We don't need to put these in there just because the industry that makes them tells us.
I know, that doesn't make sense.
Right, but they have a very, very, the folks who make these chemicals have very close contacts with the folks who buy them. They were actually initially developed as a joint project between the Navy and 3M.
So this is completely just bringing it down to people's own personal needs. A listener has a Cuisinart pan, and they thought that they had been improved. Maybe that the Teflon was better now. So what do you know about anything like that?
Every time I come on the radio, I should do a better pan search, because that is inevitably the first question I get asked.
Well, of course, because we want to know. Well, scotch tape and Teflon, that's where
we can link
into this.
Totally. Scotch tape is fine as far as
I know. Are you sure? Because I'm not sure
of anything, but I use it too.
Okay.
So
I had to use it as a fake Band-Aid. I just want you to know, so I'm worried.
That sounds like a longer story.
Okay.
But for the pans, I just switched to cast iron. I have not been trying to decipher all the replacements.
Really?
I don't know.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, listener. I wish I could advise you better.
That's all right. That's something to think about. Now, tell me, how is the how's the current administration hindering efforts to regulate any of these corporations? Are they doing anything? I mean, it doesn't appear like
But certainly this administration is exceptionally easy on environmental polluters of all kinds. And we've seen that up and down. And so many people are writing about that. And I've been writing about that, too.
Sharon, is part of the motivation profit? Is part of the, is this all driven by that? I mean,
yes.
At the exception of people's health?
You know, the rhetoric you hear is like, you know, this is cutting the red tape. And we're, you know, that's what Trump says. He wants to ease regulations. Well, these environmental regulations, in most cases, are in there to keep your, you know, air and water and, you know, keep you safe.
Breathable.
And
that's,
they're not there for fun. So I think what we're seeing, I mean, I can give you a specific example of how this might impact PFOA. One of the, and PFAS, one of the changes that have been, recently been proposed is to basically not allow the EPA to use any studies that contain, they call it like public information, but basically they're trying to, they call it the Secret Science Act. And they say that if you're going to make a regulation, well, you have to make sure that you could share every bit of data with everybody. Well, a lot of scientists use data that, you know, if you actually reveal the data, you're not allowed to, because it's like people's names and identities and whatever. But by saying this thing that sounds like kind of reasonable, you end up kind of eliminating all these studies that would be of public health benefit. And some of them actually apply to PFOA, which would impact presumably what the EPA could use when it sets the next standard.
Holy cow. I just have one more thing. So DuPont, since 2004, they've paid, let's see, more than $1 billion in class action litigation. What has that had any impact on the company at all? I mean, do you think they're more willing to pay more money or to straighten up and fly right?
So, well, interestingly, DuPont, they paid that money and they did a lot of shape-shifting in recent years. So they spun off their division that deals with these chemicals into this other company, Chemours. And then they, DuPont, went on to merge with Dow. So there's now a company, Dow DuPont, and there is no more DuPont.
Mm-hmm.
So they seem fine.
Oh, good.
I would say, you know, to investors, they seem fine to me. I should not be offering investment advice. But basically, Chemours is the one. Chemours and DuPont are still kind of the ones that will face some litigation for this. But I think that even that $1 billion, you know, I think, you know, I'm sure they feel lots of regret for the way it went down. But, you know, they seem fine to me.
My goodness. Sharon Lerner, thank you for taking the time and the trouble to shed some light on a kind of horrifying, toxic environment. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Sharon Lerner about her ongoing investigation for The Intercept and the Investigative Fund as part of Teflon Toxin Series.